Good morning and welcome to this segment of Your Morning Wake-Up Call. I'm your host, MK. Today, we talk diabetes, not just about the costs in health, but also the cost to the pocketbook and in lives. Joining us today is Dr. Danielle Ofri. She is a physician at the Bellevue Hospital, the oldest public hospital in the country, and a faculty member of NYU School of Medicine. She writes about medicine and the doctor-patient connection for the New York Times, Slate Magazine, and other publications. She's also co-founder and editor-in-chief of the Bellevue Literary Review, the first literary journal to arise from a medical setting, and she is the author of a collection of books about the world of medicine. Welcome, Danielle Ofri. It's a pleasure to have you on our show and an honor for you to take the time out of your busy schedule today.
Thank you, MK. It's a pleasure to be here.
So I saw your piece in the New York Times. It was an opinion piece about the insulin wars. And I wonder if you can begin to tell us about that problem and how we got there.
So I'll even backtrack on how I even came to write the piece. I'm a regular primary care doctor. I'm an internist, and a lot of my patients have diabetes, and I was having, on that day, a particularly difficult time getting my patient's insulin prescription to go through. I would write the brand that she was taking, and then she would call and say, it's not covered, and I would try again, make the change that I saw, and then that's not covered, and then a third one, and I just could not get this prescription to go through. And then when I finally called the pharmacist and worked on it, the one that was covered wasn't even top tier. There was no top tier. So the price was, even with the copay, was almost $100 a month, which was more than she could afford. So I began to write this piece just in my frustration of writing an insulin prescription. But what I uncovered in researching it was the incredible increase in cost of insulin. Over the years, since about 2003, it has nearly tripled in price, much more than in the cost of living or inflation, to a point that many patients can no longer afford it.
And can we talk about what that cost looks like, what it used to be to what it is now?
I mean, it used to be that insulin could be $20, $50 a vial, and now it can be $300 a vial, and sometimes more, $500 for some of the newer brand names, at a pace that is unsustainable for so many patients.
And a patient can use several vials, correct? Go through several in a month. What's the average amount that, say, a patient would go through within a month?
It really varies. Some patients use one vial a month. Some patients can use four or five vials a month, depending on the needs for their diabetes.
And your article, you cited a cost of $300 a vial, and if you figure 300 times five, that's $1,500 per month just to get your insulin.
And that's every month. And it's not a medication you can come and go on. You either are taking insulin or you're not. It's not like Motrin or Tylenol or antibiotic you just need at one point. It's a forever, and for most patients, a lifetime medication.
Let's clarify that, because I think there are some people who have diabetes or get diagnosed with type 2, and some will even go without taking their meds. They don't fully understand the seriousness of what diabetes can look like. But there's also something like type 1 diabetes, and I know about this because my mother suffered from type 1, and it's a very, very different disease, and it can cause all sorts of different symptoms. And would you like to help educate the listeners on the difference between type 1 and type 2 and how they differ from each other?
For type 1 diabetes, it's an autoimmune disease where the cells in the pancreas that make the insulin are slowly destroyed. And at some point, usually at a young age, the pancreas makes no insulin at all. And a person with type 1 diabetes has no insulin, therefore requires all the time injectable insulin to do the job, and will not survive without it. Person with type 2 diabetes may have insulin, but insulin doesn't work well. It's like insulin is the key in the door to let the glucose, the sugar, go into the cell, and that key isn't working well. And it can work because there's not enough around, or the door, you know, the key's got gunk in it, it's jammed up, and they don't have enough insulin working well enough. And so if people with type 2 diabetes can often in the beginning manage on just pills or even on diet if it's mild, but type 2 diabetes runs a gamut from mild to severe, and at the severe end can end up looking a lot like type 1 diabetes in terms of the complications and the severe effects on health and the reliance on insulin.
What are the kind of things that can happen to somebody if they go without insulin?
For type 1 diabetes, if they go without insulin, they can very quickly their body can be overwhelmed. And the worst case scenario is a situation called DKA, or diabetic ketoacidosis. And that is a medical emergency. Someone ends up in the hospital in the intensive care unit because without insulin, their sugar shoots up to such a high degree, they can become unconscious, their blood pressure can bottom out, they can have a seizure, they can die. So it's quite life-threatening. Most type 2s won't reach that level, although some can get quite sick enough to be in the ICU as well. And even if you can have a form of DKA that is quite similar, usually the onset is slower, but they can be equally sick and in the hospital, dehydrated, and requiring serious interventions. If the sugar is not well controlled in the long run over years, people have very devastating effects of the blood vessels, and that goes to anywhere. So people can have heart attacks and strokes. They can have blindness. They can have amputations. They can end up in a wheelchair. The gut cannot work well. All the places of the nerves innervate in the body can be affected by that. So in the old days, before we had effective treatments, it was very common to see people in wheelchairs with amputations, blind, and who also are on dialysis because of the kidney failure from the poorly treated diabetes.
Something also that comes into play with diabetes that I've known several diabetics in my life, and something that people don't often understand is there's also mood dysregulation that can happen sometimes with diabetes, correct? Can you talk a little bit about that just to inform people?
Sure. I mean, diabetes is an endocrine system, so it affects many of the hormones in the body, adrenaline, and many pituitary hypothalamic hormones. So it certainly makes sense that if your body begins to dysregulate from the insulin, it can have many mood effects, anxiety, depression. When people become, without their medication, very sick, they can almost look psychotic at times, even though they don't have a baseline psychosis, but their mental orientation can be affected gravely.
Yeah, right. And in fact, I know there were a number of times where my mother had car accidents, and when she was pulled over, the cops thought she was drunk because she both emitted an odor that smells like alcohol, but also the behavior is such that they can appear drunk.
Yeah, and when the blood sugar fluctuates and drops very low, hypoglycemia, people can become dizzy and woozy or pass out, and that can certainly lead to car accidents and other devastating consequences.
Yeah. Let's talk about then what happens when they can't get their insulin. Some people apparently are now rationing their insulin, even though they're insulin dependent. And what happens when that goes on?
I just say, as a physician, when I hear about that, it breaks my heart. Like, there are some things in life that shouldn't be rationed, and insulin is one of them. Any of your important medications, it's heartbreaking in a society that has this available that one should have to be rationing. So when you cut back on your insulin, remember, insulin is the key that opens the lock, opens the door to let the glucose in your blood go safely into the cells of the muscle and the liver and the fat where it gets stored. So that doesn't happen, or doesn't happen as much as it should. So now the blood sugar levels in the bloodstream stay elevated. And that has many consequences, including dehydration. People can get unconscious. They are more prone to infections. They can't see so well because it affects the vision. And people can, over time, get sicker and sicker. And there have been a number of reported deaths of patients who have been rationing insulin and may have been home alone with no one to keep an eye on them. And if you begin to lose consciousness and there's no one there, you will dehydrate and quickly die.
It is a life and death issue, especially when it comes to type 1. My mother wouldn't survive without the insulin. She would just die, period.
Type 1 diabetics have no room for error on insulin, and many type 2s have very little room for error.
And yet these people, because they don't have the money or their insurance is not covering it, they're finding themselves in situations where I was reading in an article where they actually even purposefully kind of go low, let themselves go low so they can get into the emergency room so that they can actually get some free samples of insulin. And of course, as you say, rationing, they just go without.
Yes. And what was interesting for me is, I've written a lot of pieces over the years, but this article garnered more response and letters and comments than anything I've written in my entire life. I didn't realize what a nerve this was. And I really thought I was writing about my own difficult experience as a doctor trying to get this stupid prescription to go through. But in fact, it's an enormous problem. And amongst the letters I got of the really hundreds were so many from Europe, writing, say, oh, you know, in Switzerland, insulin is free. In Belgium, I get it, you know, with a dollar copay from all the countries with, you know, universal health care, for which insulin is just an obvious no-brainer. It's available to anyone, and cost is not the issue, because the cost of untreated diabetes so swamps the cost of the insulin that one would think, if you're thinking rationally, it makes sense to have insulin to be free or very low cost.
So how and why have the prices gone up so high? What's causing this?
That is a complicated question, as I learned as I began to dig into this. The first thing I learned is that the inventors, let's say the people who discovered insulin, they purified it from animal sources, but they held a patent, which, as you can imagine, would be an incredibly valuable patent. They sold the patent for $1 each.
Wow.
Because they said insulin should be available to everyone. And I believe it was Banting or Best who said, as a physician, I cannot in good conscience earn money off this discovery that is so valuable to my patients. So the fact that we are where we are, given where it started from, is all the more horrifying. But yes, let's go into what happens. So one thing to know is that insulin, now we no longer purify from animal sources. We create it in the lab, grow it in cells. So it's more purified, the better form than the original. But it's not an easy medicine to make. You know, I will grant it's not a chemistry type experiment like sodium chloride. It's a biological compound. And so it needs to be, it is more expensive to make. There's no doubt about it. Is it that much more expensive? I don't think so. But it is a little more expensive to make than other medications. But what the real issue comes in is the patent protection that the pharmaceutical companies get for a certain number of years in order to cover the cost of research and development. And I think it's fair. You know, drug companies should earn money for the work they've done. But what happens is, instead of letting the patent run out, now we have generics, they'll make a small tweak, a tiny modification that extends the patent. And there has been some suggestion that many of the drug companies have actually pressed generic companies not to make generics, to kind of force them out with a little bit of dirty dealing, for which there is currently a lawsuit in play, to prevent generics because it's such a moneymaker. So there's the aspect of prolonging the patent by making small tweaks that aren't really changing things. That's issue one. But the second issue I learned about is that between the drug companies and then the insurers or your employer's insurance company that decide what to cover, there's a middleman, and they're called pharmacy benefit managers, PBMs. And big companies like CVS, Caremark, you hear about them, and Express Scripts, these are pharmacy benefit managers who, for insurance companies, kind of manage the whole medication formulary. And so they are busy trying to strike deals with the drug companies. And what will happen is the drug company will then raise the price so they can give a, quote, discount to the PBM to try and get them to carry it. So the prices get inflated, but the pharmacy benefit managers are making a huge profit in the middle, but they're not really adding, they're not creating the medication or giving it. They're just sort of being a middleman. So this middle thing, and it's very opaque because we don't know what are the deals, how it's happening, but somehow between the drug company and the pharmacy benefit managers and insurance companies, in the dark, there's some kind of deals for which a lot of money is being made and the savings are not being passed on to the patients.
Right, and they're rebates, I guess, sort of built-in rebates, right?
Rebates are all of these rebates and drug company coupons. You know, there's never a free lunch, and we all know that. So whenever there's a freebie or a rebate, there's a string attached to that. So you get a free, you know, dose of medication for 1 month or a discount for 2 months, but you need it for 50 years. So that little bit of rebate or freebie ultimately isn't going to matter much, but then you might get caught, and then that's now the one you get, that's much higher priced one, if you know, lower cost alternatives available. Unfortunately, with insulin, there isn't that much. The only thing there is an older form of insulin called NPH. It's actually available without a prescription. I'm not really sure how or why. At Walmart, people have told me. And it's, you know, it's certainly an alternative. It doesn't work quite as well for many patients, but that is an alternative.
And tell us the name of that again.
NPH. And it's a much, much older form of insulin that doesn't last as long as the newer 24-hour insulins. And for many patients, it's harder to take. But it is available, people have told me, without a prescription at Walmart. Of course, you shouldn't be dosing it without being in conversation with your doctor or your nurse, because the dosing of insulin is very finely tuned, and too much or too little can also be devastating.
And how does this new pricing actually put the onus on doctors and their patients?
Well, what happens is, you know, I'll write a prescription for my patient's Lantus. That's the medication they've been taking for 10 years. And they go to the pharmacy and say, oh, it's not covered. Then the patient is upset and concerned. They have to call me and get through my secretary to me. Then I have to figure out which one is covered. And that's not easy to do. I mean, do I go? I tried yesterday, in fact, to go on the Emblem Health's website and try and figure out which one. I couldn't figure it out. So I just try another one. That doesn't work. And you know, it can be hours of phone calls and faxing back and forth and real time that's just wasted, time that really should be for doctors to be with patients or do something, you know, of value. This is just like busy work and paperwork. And I feel like the insurance companies, you know, it doesn't bother them. It's not sweat off their back. They can just sort of offload the work of dealing with this to the doctors, but also offload the pain. Like, who ends up telling the patient that your medication is covered? It's usually the pharmacist or the doctor has to break the bad news, and or they'll say, oh, your doctor, you know, wrote the wrong prescription. They did the wrong thing, and kind of add a little negativity, you know, between the doctor and patient in their relationship that really isn't relevant to anything. So it adds a ton of busy work for not a lot of gain.
And so what needs to happen to prevent this kind of drug pricing?
Well, one thing is we need a Sunshine Act. We need to know what is going on between the drug companies, the pharmaceutical benefit, the PBM, the pharmacy benefit managers, and insurance companies. What are all the deals? We should know about that. I mean, after all, the drug companies may say that, well, they do all this research and development, but most of the basic science comes from NIH-funded research, public money that funds universities to do basic science research and a lot of drug research. And so although drug companies do put in effort and money, a lot of the basic science is publicly funded. And so I feel as though we as the public, we are owed a little bit more clarity in what's going on. We have a stake in that. The drug companies didn't get there by themselves. They got there on the backs of the scientific community, which is a community asset. So the first thing is, what is going on with the deals? And the second is, I think that we need some kind of legislation. There's no reason that medications have to be that expensive, especially when the same companies, when they market to Europe, the prices are lower because, you know, they will buy it then, you know, in other countries. So American patients are charged much more than their international counterparts. And the third, I think, and that's a much bigger societal question, is how we view healthcare. You know, is healthcare a commodity that you buy and sell, like, you know, nice phones and nice cars? Or is it a community benefit, like, you know, fire protection, right? Anyone can call the fire department or the police department for an emergency. You don't have to, you know, pay a fee every month or per fire that you call someone for. We all fund it with our taxes. And so this is my personal feeling, is that healthcare is a similar thing. It should be a right for everyone. We should make a decision that, you know, healthcare is community benefit, we all get it, and that therefore there should be some controls on prices, that we can't make it a commercial venture like we do for luxury cars.
Yeah, it certainly feeds the argument of Medicaid for all. Seems to feed this. If there's any argument that would help make that case, this one seems to be a strong one. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I certainly agree, and partly is the pharmaceutical companies, they have a lot of lobbyists in Washington. So, for example, Medicare and Medicaid can't negotiate for drug prices. You know, and you would think they should be able to. They have such a big market. They, you know, do a lot of medications for so many people. They'd have a lot of bargaining power. But they're prohibited by law. And why would that be? That would be because drug company lobbyists have, you know, pressured Congress, you know, to disallow that. So there's a lot of money at stake. And I think the follow the money is always a good, you know, a good dictum, because that's where the action is. And insulin should not be a way to line people's pockets at the expense of, you know, people dying from it. There was a young man, a college student, who died, and his mother has become quite the activist. And can you imagine the pain of a parent to see your child die from a medication that, you know, because he'd aged out of her health insurance plan and couldn't afford it? I can't even imagine the pain. And there's no reason in America in the 21st century, we're the richest country in the world, and we have, you know, our citizens can't afford their insulin.
Yeah, and there are also lawsuits in action. Do you want to talk about any of those?
Two, I don't know a lot of the details, but I believe several state attorneys general, and I believe Wisconsin is the site of the main lawsuit, are suing to find out what are the contractual negotiations between the drug companies and these PBMs to see why the price has gone up so extensively. And in fact, a few of the drug company drug companies have been called to Congress to testify. So it's beginning to shed light on the issue. And I think as lawmakers hear from their constituents that, you know, the medications are really unaffordable, and insulin in particular, but by no means only insulin, that it's going to come to light. And I see that in the next election cycle, that healthcare is really on people's minds. And I believe the Affordable Care Act, whatever flaws it has, certainly brought the idea to the forefront of the community conversation that really everyone deserves healthcare, and we should be thinking how best to do it, not whether or not we should all get good healthcare.
Yeah, and I do know that New Mexico is also involved in conducting some of the investigations, according to Novo Nordisk, on the insulin pricing. So clearly even calling our legislators, getting a hold of our congresspeople would probably be a good idea in this regard if anybody's struggling with their diabetes. And
I would certainly recommend that, because I know that you know, legislators, their offices keep track of the number of calls and what they're about. So even if you don't think it is going to make a difference, just make the call and say, you know, my name is so-and-so, I live in your district, I'm on this medication, my child is, we can't afford it, what are you doing about it? And if they hear that, then they have to act, because, you know, they do need to represent their constituents, and this is an important issue, and it might be one of the defining issues of our times. I mean, as it is, the U.S., we come out last when it comes to health statistics compared to other developing countries. In fact, we fall behind, you know, many underdeveloped countries in maternal mortality and all kinds of things that seem ridiculous in this day and age. And, you know, another comparable thing is the asthma inhalers. I mean, those went back on patent, and now every asthma inhaler is about $80. And in Europe, they're over-the-counter. You can buy another prescription for the equivalent of $5 or $6. And again, asthma patients cannot be without their inhalers, and they can die and die very quickly. They have an asthma attack and don't have an inhaler, and yet it's a, you know, it's a cost and it's a profit issue.
How long can a diabetic go without insulin? How long would it be before they would die if they, say, a type 1 went without insulin? How long would it take?
It's an issue of a day or two, a few days at most, depending on, you know, how severe their diabetes is. But very quickly, if you have no baseline insulin in your body, within a day or so, you would be comatose. I mean, where I, you know, we see it a lot is if someone gets arrested and in prison doesn't have their insulin with them and doesn't have access to that right away, very quickly, within the day or so, they're becoming unconscious and usually end up being brought to the hospital. But, you know, what a terrible way to have to do that.
Yeah, it's a very, very scary disease. If people want to get a hold of you, how do they contact you?
Sure, my website is danielleofri.com. That's O-F-R-I. And I have a contact tab, and it goes right to me. And I also send out about a monthly newsletter with interesting articles that relate to medicine, doctor-patient relationship, doctor-patient communication. And I'd be happy to hear from anyone.
Danielle Ofri, thank you for joining us today and sharing your wisdom and knowledge again, and for writing this article and bringing attention to this very important issue.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.